From K2L, this is Jackson Unpacked. Our podcast on news, music, and culture in Jackson Hole and around the Mountain West. I'm Taylor Pratt. Coming up on today's show, recent allegations of wolf abuse in the southwest part of the state have drawn attention from around the world.
I think wolves hold like a pretty unusual place in the human psyche.
And later, a Jackson cartoonist recently got in hot water when he published a local secret.
Yeah, it had a lot of blowback from people that felt like I outed a thing that we were all in on, and it's a privilege to know. I kind of felt like I stepped on a landmine that I didn't know was there.
These stories and more coming up on Jackson Unpacked. Thanks for tuning in today. The death of a wolf and allegations of abuse in the southwest part of the Cowboy State have drawn international attention. In early March, a man was fined $250 by Game and Fish for possession of a live animal. He allegedly hit the wolf with a snowmobile, muzzled and leashed it, took it home and walked it into a bar in Daniel, Wyoming. Many wildlife organizations in Wyoming and around the nation are calling for further charges, and Sublette County is investigating. But Game and Fish is not pursuing further charges as of now. Dante Filppula-Ankeny recently sat down with K2L's Emily Cohen, who first reported the story, and Wildfile's Mike Koshmarl about the difficulties of this story and the role wolves play in our collective consciousness here in Wyoming and around the world.
So to start, guys, wolves, they're a big deal all over the Mountain West. But I'm curious, what makes wolves unique to Wyoming?
So the way that Wyoming set up its wolf management kind of system when the state gained jurisdiction of the species about 12 years ago is the state legislature set aside this area where wolves would be managed as a predator. And then kind of in the area closest to the national parks, they'd be managed as a trophy game species. So this incident that happened, if that would have happened in the trophy game area, there'd be all sorts of kind of legal recourse for Game and Fish. But the way that wolves are managed, where the, I call it the predator zone, is just allows for a lot more to happen to animals in that area. And so it was just kind of like a management decision.
I'm going to take us all the way back to the beginning, right before this story was published. Emily, could you tell me how you learned about this story?
Yeah, I got a tip from someone who had heard about this incident, and from there, just tried to get the facts.
Yeah, and then Mike, you made your own trip down south of Jackson here. Do you describe what it was like reporting on this story?
This individual had not been talking to reporters. And so I thought I'd try to make a pitch to talk to him and, say, hey, like, I'm happy to tell your side of the story. So I went to his house. There's no one home. And then went to the Green River Bar after. While I was at the Green River Bar, like, their phone was pretty much ringing off the hook. I think I was probably there for 45 minutes, and five random calls came in from people. And at that time, the incident was really kind of blowing up. It's been very challenging reporting on it because official communication from the agencies that have investigated, the primary agency, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, has been very limited because of a statute that they believe prevents them from talking about wolves that have died.
Yeah, I wonder if you both could describe like the atmosphere. You know, what's it look like at this bar?
It's like a throwback, I guess. Kind of from another era. There's still smoking, for example, in the bar, on a strip of road where there's a lot of dilapidated buildings across the street, kind of probably, I'd say, at least 50, 60, 70 years old. I got a slaw dog for, I think, $3.
Yeah, at the Green River Bar, I believe the Green River Bar is the oldest building in Daniel. It is, like Emily said, yeah, it's kind of a throwback, absolutely. Patrons of the bar you know, they didn't think it was fair that this one guy's actions were like directing all this outrage toward the bar. And so definitely there were some comments made to me.
Yeah, I wonder if either of you guys would venture to try to put some context into the why do people care so much about wolves in this area?
I think wolves hold like a pretty unusual place in the human psyche. Just, you know, wolves were the first animals domesticated by humans. We have a very strong bond with dogs. Dogs are living with us in our homes. And so wolves are a little unusual in that way. I mean, yeah, sure, there's other animals that hold that place, but I'm not sure you can quite find another animal that we have this duality with, where we both fear and love. And I think there's a lot to that.
I think that in Wyoming specifically, attitudes toward wolves are maybe a little bit more heated, just because of the history of reintroduction. Also, certainly strong anti-fed sentiments in Western states, in Wyoming included. I think that there's still, kind of like latent strong feelings that have stuck with the species. It just seems to be inherent. They bring out just very strong feelings for and against the species.
Mike, you mentioned earlier, it wasn't very easy to get information for this story. Emily, I know you struggled as well. Could you guys explain why that is?
I think Game and Fish is really sensitive around this topic. Understandably, this has gotten a lot of blowback. You know, there is a statute that does prevent them from talking about wolves killed in the predator zone. But obviously, this is a little bit of a different situation because there was it wasn't just that the wolf was killed. Obviously, the wolf was captured and allegedly tortured. Originally, I think they were very curt with me and just trying to give very short answers. We did have an interview scheduled. They canceled the interview just before it was supposed to happen. And really haven't said much beyond that. But I think Mike can probably speak to this a little bit better about why they are being so reticent.
Yeah, I referenced this statute earlier. This statute dates to when Wyoming gained jurisdiction over wolves. There's some legislation included in that legislation that just kind of like set the framework for managing wolves. There was like a provision that basically prohibited the state from giving out identifying information about legally killed wolves. And so that has been, it's like that statute, I'd say, it's fair to say, has like stymied the free flow of information about things that are of a lot of public interest. The state of Wyoming has the position that they cannot even acknowledge that those wolves were killed in anywhere in southern Wyoming. Now, they couldn't even say in the southern, like, you know, third of the state. The complicated part of it is that this guy did something illegal, which on its face would like make the statute moot. But then when he actually killed the wolf, it was a legal act. And so then, you know, does the earlier thing he did that is illegal therefore like make the statute irrelevant later when he legally killed the wolf? I think the answer to that, we don't know yet.
What's next?
I'm paying attention to like a couple things. One, there's kind of like some outstanding legal questions. So the Wyoming Game and Fish Department has come out and repeatedly said that they do not believe that animal cruelty statute applies to predatory species. But the Sublette County attorney has a different interpretation of the statute. And so there is still a possibility that Cody Roberts will face additional prosecution for animal rights violations. So that's, of course, something I have my eye on. Another just kind of thing that I'm trying to get a sense of and keep, my finger on the pulse of is just like the public reception. Like, man, early this week, I was getting more emails and texts and just outreach and seeing like it was clearly just like there was hysteria around this incident. And I'm curious, I'm just genuinely curious if that will sustain or if it'll die down and, you know, become an incident that just kind of fades into history. I really don't know at this point.
Wildfiles, Mike Cosmero, and Cage Wells, Emily Cohen speaking with Dante Filippa Aitney about their reporting on the recent capture and death of a wolf in southwest Wyoming. Workers in Jackson Hole face unique challenges to power the community. The beauty, wild nature, and outdoor access the region offers are some of the great perks of life here. But servers, educators, nurses, home builders, and more often have to deal with the high cost of living, long commutes, and for some, mental and physical burnout. In a new series of radio diaries from KHOL Community Radio, we get to know more about some of the folks that help our community thrive and what drives them to stay here. Today, we hear from Alex Roberts, who leads a team of snowplow drivers in Grand Teton National Park. But this dispatch comes from one of the biggest storms of the season, back in early March. Roberts takes us on a ride by clearing Highway 191, giving us an inside look into what goes into the job, his efforts to prioritize his crew's mental well-being, and his thoughts about what his future holds as a government employee. Take a listen.
My name is Alex Roberts. It's been the biggest storm that we've had this year, and we're about to go out and plow some snow. Coming in. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate it. These gentlemen's days off, and they came in because it's a pretty good storm. Usually we sit around here and have a little more conversation about, all right, what needs this, what needs that. But a day like today, it's just kind of triage. Plan today, as I take a bite out of my hurried lunch, we're going to go back out on the highway. So we'll just be doing everything we can to make sure, keep it as wide as we can for folks.
I'm from Columbus, Ohio, originally. Went to Ohio State University, got a degree in Parks, Rec, and Tourism Management. And then I had an opportunity to apply for National Park stuff out west. So I applied to a whole bunch of jobs with the Park Service just about everywhere and had a callback from here. And at the time, I didn't even know what Grand Teton was. So I said, well, can I have a day to think about it so I could go home and Google it? And of course, the first picture I see is, you know, the iconic Schwalbacher's Landing with a moose and the mountains in the background. And I was like, yeah, I think I could live and work there. When I wake up on a day like today, so the first things that go through my mind are making sure my staff are okay and they've got the tools that they need to safely clear the road and obtaining access for emergencies. So, you know, you think about if someone's out there sledding up on Togarty and has an accident, ambulance needs to come through this way.
411, Teton Dispatch.
And then starting to think about, like, what's the next step?
411, County is wondering what the conditions are on 89 for an ambulance to be able to make it through to get up to Tovey Pass.
Yep, so if we are unable to keep it clear, to keep it open, if it is shut down, what are the steps we're going to need to take? It's all just kind of a, you know, educated guess. You have predictions of how it's going to go and what's going to happen. You could look at the forecast and go, yeah, okay, more snow and wind. But at the end of the day, you just got to go with what's actually presented in front of you and just kind of take it one step at a time. Trying to find that balance of a good leader for my crew, like that's the challenge I face. I want to make sure to honor all of them as individuals and respect the work they do, and then making sure people take care of themselves, take the time off, understand that, you know, this, what we do is important, but it is just a job. Part of the reason we really have to emphasize work-life balance is I live in the park, I work in the park, I recreate in the park, like everything I do, it's like you never leave the office in a way. I'm an instructor for a National Park Service program called Operational Leadership, which is about empowering staff at all levels to speak up, especially in circumstances of safety. These days, that program is evolving into also psychological safety and personal well-being, emphasizing a see something, say something, speak up culture, an environment where people feel safe to be themselves and raise concerns when they feel otherwise has been hugely important. Fortunate to have a affordable housing close by to work. I feel so bad for folks that have to work 2 and 3 jobs just to pay rent around here to be able to stay here. While I am so fortunate to be well compensated and have affordable housing, I do often think about, I spend 30 years making this my home and my community and my foundation. What do I do, you know, when that's over? And that's been pretty, tough to grapple with, because I do love it here, and we're all here because, well, we love this place. Like, how could you not? But we just want everybody to respect it and love it the same way that we do, so that way it is here for future generations.
Alex Roberts leads a crew of snowplow drivers in Grand Teton National Park. This radio diary was produced by KHOL contributor Kieran Hadley. Over the next few weeks, we'll be hearing from more residents about what drives them to stay in Jackson Hole and the challenges they face living here. If you're interested in sharing your story, drop us a note at news@jhcr.org. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Jackson Unpacked from KHOL, where we showcase reporting and interviews on news, music, and culture in Jackson Hole and around the Mountain West. New episodes of Jackson Unpacked drop every other Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Jackson Unpacked is generously sponsored by the Snake River Sporting Club. At nearly 1,000 acres, this private western community accesses the Snake River and Bridger Teton National Forest. Not to mention a golf course, equestrian center, and fully functioning ranch. More information about excursions, amenities, and lifestyle at snakeriversportingclub.com.
Marmot Ate My Boots is a local collective of musicians playing folk and bluegrass, 90s and 2000s pop covers, and originals. They recently stopped by the KHOL studio to play a few songs, like this cover of Paradise by the late, great John Prine. You can hear more of their live performance and chat with KHOL's music director over at 891KHOL.org. Thanks for tuning in to KHOL. I'm Tyler Pratt. State House Minority Leader Democrat Mike Yen faces unique challenges when he travels from the far west side of the state to Cheyenne to work on behalf of his constituents here in Teton County. Sky-high property values, their attendant property taxes, a dearth of housing options for low-income workers, and a median income that's much higher than most other communities in the state. All of these challenges make Teton County feel like another world, but Yen says he's working on behalf of the state and its residents. Wyoming Public Radio's David Dudley spoke with Representative Yen about housing, abortion, and the potential special session that was voted down the day before the interview.
And we're here today to talk about the process of coming from Jackson, Teton County, down to Cheyenne. Can you kind of tell me, broad strokes, what does that process mean for you?
So we're in one corner of the state, and where I have to go to the other corner of the state to represent my community, but also to represent what I believe the best interests of the state are. So not just my community, but the entire state.
And what are some of the projects? What are some of the issues that you're primarily concerned with?
You know, I think we had a brief conversation about housing. Housing is super important in my community. And, you know, when I talk about those values of being able to raise a family in Wyoming, it's getting harder and harder. I mean, it's always been hard, I think, in Jackson, but it's getting harder and harder in every other community across the state.
What can government do to help that situation?
The question is, I think, more so, what kind of options can we give local communities to ensure that they solve the problem? And so I think that there are a bunch of different ways, and I've proposed different ways myself, right? So I've proposed with former Representative Schwartz a real estate transfer tax and being able to use that transfer tax to help build new affordable housing in our community. I think that's still a possibility, but I think that there are also all kinds. Like, for example, Cheyenne is bringing their own sort of idea, and that could be a tool that we use across the state as well. And so I think really what we're trying to create is the forum for people to bring solutions to us, and then we can determine if those solutions make sense for communities across the state.
When you say that Cheyenne has brought something to the table, what is that that they brought that they're suggesting?
So it sounds like from the conversation that we had in Management Council that they are interested in a tax incremental financing tool, which I believe is something where you help incentivize new housing to be built by borrowing against future property tax value increases.
And can you kind of tell me, when you come here to represent Teton Jackson, what are some of the challenges that you face because of, you know, you're bringing certain concerns to the table and they're not always statewide. What are some of the challenges you face where that's concerned?
I think it's a broad range, right? So I think people have a preconceived perception of what they believe concerns out of Jackson are. And so there's a little bit of challenges of basically trying to get an accurate picture across to the rest of the state and to other members who represent other communities on what the issues in Jackson are. And another challenge is that, frankly, that there's a lot of money coming out of Teton County affecting how we discuss issues across the state. And that becomes a concern because it's hard to fight someone who can spend a lot of money to talk about your town in a way that's disparaging to the rest of the state.
And when you talk about, you know, Teton County, you know, they generate a lot of money because of property taxes. How does that kind of funnel into the rest of the state?
I think this is one that you'll hear a lot, is that we're a recapture district. So the way that we fund schools is through property taxes, but we fund it through a model where all the property taxes kind of get funneled into the state, and the state redistributes all of that to every school district to ensure that everyone gets approximately an equal education across the board. And so Teton County is one where it pays more in property taxes than it receives in school funding or that the model allocates for its school funding. And so that way we're actually helping to fund schools across the state in Teton County. I think that's perfectly fair. I think that the ultimate concern is, does having those high property tax values make it harder for what I was talking about earlier, having people be able to raise a family in Teton County? And so it's trying to deal with those push and pulls, but then also not incentivizing those property values to continue going up, but start going in the other direction maybe a little bit to discuss how do we ensure that people can still afford to live in Teton County at all.
And out of the topics discussed this morning, are there some that you're hoping to work on that are maybe not being given the attention that they deserve so far?
You know, I think housing is a good one, but I think labor and health is actually going to be talking about maternity care and child care issues, and those again are really core family issues. But I think that those are also affected by what has been the majority party's kind of one of their platform issues, which is abortion. And that affects how we talk about both maternity care and child care, in the fact that we've passed laws that criminalize doctors that do those kind of things. And so that makes it that much harder to have a baby in Wyoming if we can't have doctors who are willing to live in Wyoming if they're at risk at going to jail, frankly. And so I think I'm glad that we have that topic, but I worry that that topic may not be solvable as long as the party platform pushes for abortion to be completely outlawed in the state.
You all have just dealt with a vote for the special session. Did that vote go as you had hoped?
Yes, I think it went the way that I wanted, but I'm also disappointed and frustrated by the fact that we burned an entire week of everybody's lives trying to discuss the issue at all when I didn't think it was necessary to even call for the special session.
State Rep Mike Yen speaking with Wyoming Public Radio's David Dudley. You're listening to Jackson Unpacked. A cartoonist in Jackson Hole riffs on ski culture weekly in comics published in the daily newspaper and on social media. But one of his recent comics drew outrage from the community. KGL's Dante Fopla Ankeny reports on the incident, the blowback, and what it says about a division within ski towns, not only in Jackson, but throughout the Mountain West.
Ryan Stolp's newspaper comic is due in 30 minutes, but he doesn't know what he's going to draw. He consults his half-baked list of ideas and then grabs his iPad.
I would love to tell you that I think these through more than I do, but
But he has no time to. Stick figure here, sketch there, speech bubble, color, and done. He sends it off to the paper just in time.
And that's how Jackson, at least, gets a Lift Lines.
Lift Lines is Stope's satirical comic that riffs on ski culture and the lifestyle in mountain towns like Jackson. It runs 3 times a week, in the town's daily paper as well as on Instagram, to his 15,000 followers. But this spring, one of his comics drew community outrage, unlike any he's done before.
I knew there was this little secret, so I'm like, okay, I can fly kind of close to the sun and I can make this joke.
The secret exposed a hack that allowed locals to avoid a $35 daily parking fee in a lot at the base of Jackson Hole Mountain Resort. The lot offered a way to avoid an about hour-long bus ride to the resort. So dozens, if not hundreds, of locals had been using the hack by quickly scanning their ticket.
And so I kind of felt like I stepped on a landmine that I didn't know was there.
Soon after the comic ran, the group that runs the parking lot cracked down. No more hack, no more free parking. Locals were not amused. Suddenly, Stope was targeted by spam callers and the Jehovah's Witnesses, a setup he suspects was sparked by angry locals. And among the hundreds of angry Instagram comments, he was described as public enemy number one and warned that he would get punched in the face.
It's different when everyone that's mad is like your neighbor and your community member and your friend or your friend of a friend.
$35 might not seem like much, but the incident highlights a friction in ski towns across the Mountain West. Skiing and snowboarding continues to grow, bringing more people to resort towns. And that drives up prices on housing, meals, lift tickets, almost everything. Many residents are feeling the squeeze.
Resort and tourism-based communities have very unique challenges, such as high cost of living, affordable housing issues, and transportation is very much a ski town issue.
That's Margaret Bowes, executive director of the Colorado Association of Ski Towns. She says parking fees and parking tickets aim to steer people to carpools and shuttles. Still, the charges can rankle residents who long for the good old days. Julian LaCourse, who worked as a bartender in town, has felt that friction. He used the parking hack hundreds of times and saw nothing wrong with using something that was widely available, at least to those who knew.
I don't think it's possible to steal something when it's allowed.
He considers Stope a friend, but wishes the cartoonist had apologized. He thinks a lot of the blowback was deserved, but also that many went too far.
Any calls to violence are outlandish. That's ridiculous, guys.
Stope attributes the blowback to folks who are frustrated about changes in town and are looking for a scapegoat.
I think the thing that you have an obligation to do, no matter where you are in that community, is to be a role model and steward how that community should evolve, because all things change.
Recently, he was back on the mountain.
Beautiful sunrise on Tetons this morning.
There's a mountain host and their ski patrol at the top of the tram. If you have any questions...
After riding the tram towards the top of Rendezvous Mountain, he straps on his skis in front of Corbett's cabin.
I think the community showed its true colors in the end, and the true colors were good. That's why I live here. That's why I love living here. There's great people around every corner.
And down into the bowl he goes. Dante Fabla Inkney, KHOL News.
That's it today on Jackson Unpacked. Original music for the show is performed by the local band Strumbucket. I'm Tyler Pratt, and this is KHOL Jackson.